What they're doing is blowing people off.
If you continue to look the other way and shut up, then the oppressors, the authoritarians, get total control and total power. Because this is just like in Arizona, this is just like in Georgia. It's another element that backs them into a corner and shows their lies and misrepresentations.
This is why this audience is going to have to get engaged. As we've told you, this is the fight.
All this nonsense, all this spin, they can't handle the truth.
War Room, Battleground. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Of course, we have looked all very carefully at the communication coming out of the Xi Jinping meeting with Vladimir Putin, and we very much hope that the phone call will take place as soon as possible between Xi Jinping and Volodymyr Zelensky. I think this morning I did not get reports that a phone call had taken place, but I think that's crucial. Also, because China has come up with a peace proposal, which, of course, when we read it, there are elements in it which could be helpful. Elements which are not so helpful, but here the devil is in the detail. So a direct communication between Xi Jinping and Volodymyr Zelensky would be welcomed.
Do you think China can actually play that role as a broader in this
way? That's difficult to assess at this moment. Well, that's difficult to assess at this moment whether they can play that role, but of course it's up to Zelensky and his team to engage in whatever proposal is on the table if they see merit in it. But then, of course, you first need to establish.
Yield to the lady from Arizona, Ms. Lesko, for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Chu, do you agree that the Chinese government has persecuted the Uyghur population?
Congresswoman, if you use our app and you open it, you will find our users who give all sorts of content.
That's not my question. My question is, do you agree that the Chinese government has persecuted the Uyghur population?
Well, it's deeply concerning to hear about all accounts of human rights abuse. My role here is to explain what our platform does on this.
It's a pretty easy question. Do you agree that the Chinese government has persecuted the Uyghur population?
Congresswoman, I'm here to describe TikTok and what we do as a platform. And as a platform, we allow our users to freely express their views on this issue and any other issue that matters to them.
Well, you didn't answer the question.
If you just let me know, by the way, it's Thursday, March 23rd, March, year of our Lord, 2023. I want to make sure, if Memphis could cut that last part, I want to play that again. Just tell me when it's ready. Today's been nothing but really arrogance from the Chinese Communist Party operative that runs TikTok. And I think it's pretty embarrassing. We talked about this in the morning show. When you had, What Modi did in India a couple of years ago is that they just took down all the CCP apps in one afternoon, including TikTok, and they've never had their kids poisoned by this. This is a weapon. It's a poisonous weapon. As we've said from day one, it's a big part of their unrestricted warfare. As you know, the book we've walked you guys through for the last, what, 2 or 3 years? This is unrestricted warfare, you know, pre-kinetic. And it's just outrageous. Today's hearing, I thought it was a joke. This guy was arrogant. You just saw right there. If we have that clip again, if Memphis, you just replay this clip from Lesko of Arizona. Let's go ahead and roll it again.
Yield to the lady from Arizona, Ms. Lesko, for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Chu, do you agree that the Chinese government has persecuted the Uyghur population?
Congresswoman, if you use our app and you open it, you will find our users who give all sorts of content.
That's not my question. My question is, do you agree that the Chinese government has persecuted the Uyghur population?
Well, it's deeply concerning to hear about all accounts of human rights abuse. My role here is to explain what our platform does on this.
It's a pretty easy question. Do you agree that the Chinese government has persecuted the Uyghur population?
Congresswoman, I'm here to describe TikTok and what we do as a platform. And as a platform, we allow our users to freely express their views on this issue other issue that matters to them.
Well, you didn't answer the question.
Okay, if we're going to be a great power, we're going to start acting like a great power. We just had this hugely significant, as we've been walking through for the last couple of weeks, about this meeting that took place in Moscow between the KGB and the CCP. If you're going to be a great power, you got to act like a great power. Today was not us acting like a great power. And yeah, there were a lot of sharp questions, but this guy shows up. He's a CCP asset. The company's pure CCP. And you just sit there with the arrogance. He's got the best lobbyists, the best lawyers. He's been, you know, he was well prepped, very well prepped. But how not to answer a question. I want to bring in Brigadier General Tata. Was in the Trump administration. In fact, Brigadier General, you were actually over in the Pentagon as the, I think, the acting secretary for policy, which is like over the State Department. It's probably one of the most powerful jobs in our government that people don't know a lot about. Give us your sense. You're a novelist now. We're going to get to that in a second. But give us your sense geopolitically where we are after you've had the, you know, moral equivalent, the 21st century equivalent of the Molotov Ribbentrop meeting in Moscow this week with the KGB and their senior partners, the CCP, sir.
Yeah, Steve, great to be with you and all your listeners. We're at a really precarious time right now in this country and the world. We have portrayed so much weakness over the last couple of years, beginning with the bumbled Afghanistan exit that really did two things. It fractured NATO in a way that the corporate media has not covered, won't let anybody talk about. But we had, you know, 30 some nations over there that we just left hanging. And when I was the undersecretary, we had a mantra that we came in together, we adjusted together, and we were going to leave together. And you know, our president at the time, he wanted to get out of there. But, you know, we left 2,000 troops there, and it was a very reasonable solution going forward. And the Biden administration, they weren't even paying attention, and we started leaving. And they were all on vacation. And NATO broke in a way that I have not seen in my lifetime, and because we left them hanging. And then secondly, they were still using Russian oil, which the president talked about all the time. So Putin then moves his troops to the end of Belarus and along the Ukrainian border, and nobody's talking. Blinken's nowhere to be found. There's no diplomacy whatsoever. And so that massive weakness, that power vacuum that has been created by an absent Biden administration has allowed China now to come up and begin to ascend all the way to a global leadership position. And they have been posturing for this for a long time with their Belt and Road Initiative. Just a couple of weeks ago, they signed a deal with Saudi Arabia and Iran. And so they are trying to supplant themselves in the Middle East. All of our blood and treasure that went into securing the oil and all of that. Meanwhile, we're not energy independent anymore. And so we now rely more on Middle East oil than we did a couple of years ago. And so China then steps in as a peacemaker into Ukraine-Russia situation. And it's a really tough thing to watch after 30 years of service, Steve, and all the soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines with whom I fought. And places all around the world to hold up American prestige and honor and be that tip of the spear of our foreign policy. It's really tough to watch a administration disavow all of that, quite frankly, and be more focused on the wrong things as opposed to maintaining our status as the preeminent military in the world, a preeminent influencer in the world.
If you had to go back to what we tried to do in the particularly the early days of the Trump administration, was if you're going to confront the CCP, and of course, you know, I was according to Josh Rogan, his book Chaos Under Heaven, the head of the Super Hawks, which we don't believe in the legitimacy of the CCP. We think that our main focus should be assisting the Lao Beijing, the Chinese people, to take down the CCP. But even if you're a hardliner like Pompeo was, or if you're a realist like Mattis was, or even if you're an accommodationist like Kushner and Cohen were, the other groups that kind of fought it out in the White House, if you just look around the Eurasian landmass and you go from counterclockwise from the Northwest Pacific, where we have South Korea and Japan, you get down to the Straits of Taiwan, the South China Sea, you come around to the Indo-Pacific, you had India, you come up to the Persian Gulf, you know, you've got Saudi Arabia, Israel, other nations, UAE, other nations, and you get to Europe, and particularly Northwest Europe with NATO. If you're going to do this in an America first way, you have to have allies. Given that you're saying that NATO got shattered in Afghanistan, is there, particularly with this European war that the European Union and NATO continue to press, is it your belief now that President Trump, one of his things was that, hey, look, you got to pay the 2%. The 2%, they came up with the 2% after the modern revolution, revolution overthrew the democratically elected, although Putin-aligned government in Ukraine. Do you believe that NATO today is actually not a vassal state, not a protectorate, but an actual ally? Do you think that they're making progress, forward progress, to get to the 2% of GDP and actually have a operative military? Because when I was there and went through all the budgets of NATO, it was kind of a joke. I mean, they spend it on climate change. They spend all these healthcare initiatives. When you actually look at the equipment, material, interoperability, maneuvers, things like that, you don't see a lot. What are your thoughts about NATO as anything but a vassal state?
Yeah, I used to say, Steve, that NATO was somewhat of a cocktail circuit, and it's more of a political organization than a military organization. Now, that's not to say that brave Brits, Canadians, and other allied nations that fought with us in Afghanistan didn't do what they were told to do. But at the senior levels, it is a very political organization. And the 2%, they're not, for the most part, not paying their 2%. They were driving toward that under President Trump, as you know. And that they're more focused on peacekeeping operations, or even when I commanded Brit soldiers, a para battalion came into Afghanistan, and they were, when they got into Kandahar, they had to reset because they were trained for peacekeeping operations. They didn't realize how we were knocking heads down there with Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, and they had to reset. And so Europe right now is really not interested. And they're interested in the United States carrying the bag to help with Ukraine. And you might have like Poland and some of the other newer nations in NATO that are willing to come to the fray. But we can't even get them to adjust their oil use or who they're buying it from, because, you know, it's the easy get is from Russia and so the Nord Stream 2 and all that. And President Trump warned about all of this, and he got laughed at for saying this. But it's 100% true that, you know, they are relying on Russian oil. They're buying Russian oil while they want us to provide arms and weapons to Ukraine. So NATO was already as an entity lacking any kind of leadership. President Trump was that alpha dog that needed to lead the pack. Right now, there is no alpha dog. Blinken's nowhere to be found. President Biden just, you know, does what he's told. And at the end of the day, we've got a situation here where you've got a NATO looking over their shoulder, wanting us to come in and save the day with Ukraine. And we've got rotational brigade combat teams going into Romania and the Balkans and all of that, which I think is smart. It's important that we maintain, you know, democracy and Europe and have capitalist trading partners and all of that. At the same time,
if the Europeans are prepared, if the Europeans are prepared to defend themselves. Look, we bailed them out in the First World War when Pershing went over with MacArthur and General Marshall was the chief of staff. We bailed them out in World War One. We then bailed them out in World War Two. We then bail them out in the Cold War, three times the charge. I mean, this is a European war. This is, General, you were, 81, a graduate of West Point. If we sat down today and told General Montgomery and General Patton and General Marshall and Eisenhower and Omar Bradley that we were contemplating and doing work right now to support a land war in Ukraine, they would look at us like we had lost our minds. Correct? I mean, that was an absolute. It was hard to get the Brits to buy into D-Day, and I'm not saying they shouldn't, given their what happened to them on the Somme. They didn't even want to do a amphibious landing in Europe because of the casualty rates. Even as crazy as Churchill was in the Balkans, never, ever, ever, ever would there be any consideration whatsoever for American combat troops anywhere near the Ukraine. Am I wrong in that? People don't know the history of World War II. Would our leaders of World War II, if we were having a discussion today, they say this is insanity?
Yeah, you're exactly right, Steve. There is no argument for boots on the ground from any NATO nation inside Ukraine. It doesn't breach Article 5. It doesn't do anything to NATO other than rise the temperature a little bit, right? And sure, you know, Putin invaded Ukraine. He shouldn't have done that. We need to take a stand, we got to draw the line somewhere on how much support we provide. What are the flexible turn options we put forward? But we've got to show some leadership here. And again, there's been no diplomacy whatsoever, and that's what China's coming in to do, right? China is trying to take that. And you know, think about this, Steve. You remember Reagan built out, you know, he got our economy roaring again, built out the military, 500 ship Navy, 500,000 person army, and grew the Air Force. And we bankrupted the Soviet Union because we could outspend them. Right now, our economy is not awesome. And China's economy is increasing GDP every year. And they projected a slowdown in the growth of GDP, but they're still increasing in growth of GDP. And think about Russia inside Ukraine and this administration think, okay, we've got them on the ropes. And now China comes in with somewhat of a limitless supply of arms and munition and cash it's almost like a reverse Cold War that Xi is trying to do to us. Let's get the United States focused on, you know, we're doing it of our own accord already, 100% in Ukraine, and let's backstop Russia so United States just continues to spend money, treasure, etc. inside Ukraine, and then I'm going to look over my shoulder and do a soft takeover of Taiwan, a la Hong Kong.
Are you given you were 82nd Airborne, you were 101st Airborne with combat units, elements of that 10th Mountain Division. Are you concerned? We had Colonel Mills on Saturday and actually went through the map of Taiwan where the amphibious assaults, where the air assaults would come to secure the high-end chip plants. Are you at all concerned given the focus that the Pentagon has put in armaments, material into supporting the Ukrainian fight in Ukraine? The Ukrainian fight, particularly in Bakhmut and other places on eastern Ukraine, are you concerned that we don't have adequate resources to defend blockading the South China Sea, Straits of Taiwan, or particularly amphibious or air assault into Taiwan to take those advanced chip plants?
Yeah, I'm very concerned about that. I commanded a brigade combat team in the 101st Airborne Division. Yeah, right now there's 101st Airborne is rotating into Romania, and you know, you've got a full brigade combat team of 4,000 troops there as a flexible deterrent option to message to Russia, don't get near the border. And so if the balloon goes up over Taiwan, really, what are we going to do? You know, we're providing Patriot missile units, systems to the Ukrainians. We're providing M1 Abrams tanks, and we are depleting our resources. There's critical shortages of certain kinds of ammunition, 155 millimeter artillery, and other types of ammunition that are in low supply worldwide, and so if we get in a position where we cannot resource ourselves to fight the war that we say is our number one priority, which is China, Taiwan, then we're in a real hurt locker.
Tell me about it. You've turned to become since you left the Trump administration and left the army, you've turned into a novelist. Tell me about Total Empire. It's one of those ones for the guys that are grabbing a plane. It's the thing you take with you to be a read to kind of take your mind off all your troubles in the world. Very, very, not just entertaining, but it's got a lot of geopolitics in it. How did you get inspired to write this?
Yeah, so Steve, everything we've been talking about motivated me to write a book, and it's my 15th novel. So from St. Martin's Press, Macmillan. And it's all about an ascendant China with advanced weaponry tricking an administration so that we become beholden to China. And I wrote it about 18 months ago, 2 years ago. That's the book production cycle. You got to turn it in. It takes you 6-9 months to write, and then it takes them a year to get it out. And so it's just reading the news, being the junkie on geopolitics that I am. It's a great story about Chinese ascendancy in the world and the trickery that they use, which is kind of par for the course for anybody who studies geopolitics, as I know you do. It's if you're not cheating, you're not trying kind of thing. And certainly nation states are out there first and foremost to aggrandize themselves to, anything. If anybody believes that there's a utopian purpose beyond enriching China or, even the United States, then they don't understand realist foreign policy. So Total Empire is really about all of the bad actors out there. And we've got our hero, General Garrett Sinclair, who is the commander of Joint Special Operations Command and Task Force Dagger, who is the president's special mission unit that goes out and does very discreet missions for the president of the United States. So Total Empire tries to capture all of the things going on in the world today. And it's just happens to be coming out. It came out 2 days ago, released into the wild here and getting a lot of great responses because it is 100% what's going on today. An alliance between China, Russia, North Korea, Iran, and it's the United States being handed their jockstrap, so to speak, to use a sports analogy. Our hero has to save the day for the country.
General Tata was interim head of policy, undersecretary of policy for President Donald J. Trump over the Pentagon, trying to sort that mess out. General Tata, thank you. 81 grad of the Academy and a combat leader of the 82nd, the 101st, 10th Mountain Division, sir, awarded the Bronze Star. Thank you very much. The novel's fantastic. Already had a couple of the War Room producers read it and loved it. So good luck with the book and look forward to having you back on to talk geopolitics and national security, sir.
Thank you, Steve, and thanks for all you do.
Thank you, sir. Honored. Okay, we're going to pivot before break. I've got Rebecca Koffler on. Rebecca, I've got 2 minutes here, 2.5 minutes. I'm going to toss the ball to you. I just want you to recap what you told the audience. So you got a great piece up about this historic. I keep saying, maybe I ask it this way. I keep comparing this to the Molotov-Ribbentrop meeting, the secret meetings that took place in 1939 that led to that agreement that the two Nazis and the Russians fought on the same side during Poland in the early days of World War II. Although it may be closer to the secret deals the Nazis had with the Japanese to really control the Eurasian landmass from kind of the rim inward. What are your thoughts? You got 2 minutes before you go to break. What are your thoughts about that?
Yes, absolutely, Steve. That is a great analogy. We live right now in the riskiest period in modern history. It is my assessment that we face a two-front war right now, one with Russia over Ukraine that Joe Biden is hyper-focused on, and the other one with China over Taiwan. Just like General Tata said a few minutes ago, we are depleting our own combat arsenal. by pumping in this high-tech weaponry to Ukraine. $196 billion worth has already been provided or committed to provide. This is the equivalent of Ukraine's entire GDP for 2021. And so this is exactly why those two were talking about, Putin and Xi. Let me just quote what Xi told Putin as he was saying goodbye to his dear friend. He said, "Changes are taking place now that haven't happened in 100 years. When we are together, we drive these changes." And Putin said, agreed. So Joe Biden is completely unprepared for handling two wars at the same time. The Pentagon is focused on pronouns and Marxist ideologies instead of teaching our officers how to win wars. The Chinese have developed unrestricted warfare in which they plan to exploit what they call extravagant style of warfare, because we're shooting birds with golden bullets, according to the Chinese. Remember the balloon that we just shot down using a $400,000 missile? This is exactly how they're going to deplete our missile arsenal in the run-up to this war, just General Tata said. So we are in a mess with Joe Biden.
Rebecca, just hang on 1 second. We'll take a short commercial break and return with Rebecca Koffler in a moment.
That's fine.
Stephen K. Bannon.
Thursday, 23 March, year of our Lord 2023. When we first opened, I didn't have my mic open in the first segment, so I did it right this time, folks. Rebecca Koffler, just real quickly, I want to go back to your background. You were at Defense Intelligence Agency, and your specialty is Soviet Russian strategy, the inner command of Putin and how Putin thinks. You wrote a book that I continue to tell people is one of the most profound books ever written by Putin. And I think you can see his moves if you read your book. First, I'll tell our audience quickly, what is defense intelligence? Most people know the CIA and James Bond characters at MI6. What is defense intelligence? What is the role of defense intelligence? Why were you there? And I want to talk about your specialty of knowing the Kremlin's high command, particularly the KGB, FSB that run it. And I want to also talk about the war games and what came out of your efforts there, ma'am.
Absolutely. So the Defense Intelligence Agency is the military counterpart to the CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency. We call the CIA clowns in action, actually, but this is lovingly, so to speak, right? What we do, CIA provides political intelligence. DIA, we provide warfighting intelligence. What does it mean? We track foreign adversaries' military capabilities, military intentions, and specifically assess how do they fight wars, because not everybody fights wars the same way that the United States does, right? We are the top dog militarily. We have superior weaponry, but our weakness is understanding how the adversaries plan to take us on, right? Because Russia and China, they developed concepts that intended to bypass our technological superiority that the adversaries believe is our vulnerability. Remember Afghanistan, after 20 years of fighting people who don't even have a regular army, right? They wear towels on their heads and they don't have superior weaponry that we do, but we withdrew. And that is an example of how adversaries like Russia and China think. And so the wargaming, as you said, I was one of the top three in the entire U.S. intelligence community that includes 18 different agencies, including mine. I was the top part of the top three team on Russian doctrine and strategy. We knew what Putin was thinking, what doctrine and strategy Russia was developing. I personally briefed scores and scores of military commanders and senior officials within the Obama administration's Pentagon, the political appointees, right? I briefed Obama's National Security Council. I briefed NATO, Steve, in the run-up to the 20th 2014, Putin's invasion of Crimea. I briefed NATO in September 2013. Laid out at the level that we're allowed to. We conducted war games at the very, very high level, top secret and above, but then we downgraded certain, top secret information, and we laid it out. And as General Tyler just said, NATO was not willing to chip in. The Europeans were not willing to chip in towards their own security. President Trump had to practically, twist our arms to provide even 2%. And so nobody did anything about that, right? And now everybody's acting surprised. Oh, Putin, invaded Ukraine. Well, and somehow we're supposed to magically come up with a strategy. Biden was at the helm as the vice president. He was in charge of the Ukraine policy, right? Did nothing about that. And so the war gaming showed to us, every single war game, Steve, that I was at, and I led some of them as the red team. There's blue and there's red, right? For your listeners, blue is the United States and NATO, and red is the adversary. In this case, it was Russia. I also participated in some with China. And so every single war game with Russia, if we pushed them very hard, it ended up in a limited nuclear war. What is a limited nuclear war? The Russians, they have acknowledged that conventionally, the United States and NATO are superior. At the same time, they can simply know they can't give up what they call the strategic security perimeter, of which Ukraine is part of. The Russians relied on that for their security for centuries. That perimeter has reduced with the collapse of the Soviet Union from 1,000 miles to 100 miles, right? It's a shorter distance than between New York and Washington. And so what do they do as part of these war games that we uncovered? They detonate a low-yield tactical nuclear warhead, sub-kiloton, in order to create what they call a strategic pause, just kind of throw off the adversary off balance, make them think, and deter the US from deploying troops and intervene on their behalf. And so that's what Joe Biden is sleepwalking into. And he realizes that. Remember, a couple of months ago, he acknowledged we are now facing potentially a nuclear Armageddon. Cyber Armageddon is something different that the Russians are also preparing for. And so, so why is he doing that? Why is he intentionally dragging us into a nuclear furnace where potentially our boys and girls are going to be deployed as Zelensky wants them to? Remember a few weeks ago, he said, your children are going to fight in my war. Why is he doing that? I have no idea. He effectively has outsourced decision-making on strategic issues to a foreign leader, Zelensky, because anything Zelensky wants, Joe Biden just give him just like that, writing a blank check.
Or is it your professional opinion, because all the talk, China came up with a peace proposal, you got to go to the table, but it assumes no Russian troops out of Donbass and certainly not Russia giving up Crimea. Do you believe there's any intention of the Russians at all to either leave Eastern Russian speaking Ukraine in the Donbass or to leave Crimea, ma'am?
Zero intention to leave. And there's also Ukrainian chances to win this war are exactly zero, Steve. Why? Is because Putin is pursuing a strategy of attrition that relies on relentless attrition of manpower. That's how the Russians won every single war in history. So the Russians have 143 million people, Ukrainians have 43. So you can do the math. And so this is why the Pentagon and Joe Biden are prepared to fight the Russians until the last Ukrainian. And then what? And so she knows this. And while we are mired in Ukraine, he's transitioning China onto a wartime footing. Okay, I wrote another piece in the New York Post describing the five what we call INWs in the intelligence business, indications and warnings of what she is doing. Just real quick, he has established a wartime cabinet. He gave direction to his armed forces to put all the energy to get ready for war. China has beefed up its space order of battle from 250 satellites to 499 satellites. Why? It's because every aspect of warfare right now is conducted through satellite constellation, from missile warning to command and control to navigation, targeting, precision strike. And at the same time, China also is developing counter space weapons to what they call deafen and blind US forces. They have concluded that our space reliance is our Achilles heel, and they want to cut us off, deafen and blind us. And those counter space weapons include kinetic kill vehicles, electronic warfare, directed energy weapons, all the way to space or robots orbiting the Earth, right? And that's what he's doing. And as long as he believes that we are hyper-focused on Ukraine, we're incapable of fighting a two-front war. And this is what, you know, this team is just completely incompetent. And our commander-in-chief is unable to make the decisions that prioritize our national interests, not someone else's, not Ukraine, Zelensky. Yes, Ukrainian people have fought valiantly, but Zelensky is strategically incompetent. If he thought that Putin was going to allow Ukraine to become part of NATO, he is completely naive. He doesn't understand history. I mean, we wouldn't allow Russia or China to get as close as Mexico or Canada. No military commander would allow 100-mile proximity of an adversarial alliance. So that's where we are at. That's the big picture. That is why my assessment is that we're living in the riskiest time on modern history.
In the riskiest time, let me ask you about people. One of the pushbacks we get about NATO is that if Putin is not stopped and the Russian military are not stopped in Ukraine, that the Baltics, the new members of NATO are coming in, Finland, Scandinavia, the Baltics, Poland, are going to be ripe for the taking. When I look at Bakhmut, and there, it's interesting about Zelensky's call. Zelensky has been very adamant from day one, and the Western allies have been saying, no, you got to give it up, retrench, get ready for a counteroffense in the spring. He's been saying, no, it's strategic, symbolically, in the optics of the Ukrainian people. And they've made a quite courageous stand. I mean, there's not much actually left of Bakhmut right now. But does it show the world that the Russian military is kind of, I don't know, through corruption and incompetence, but how have they been unable to take Bakhmut? And now I think we're in the sixth or seventh month of this battle, which is right now becoming the biggest, bloodiest, gnarliest battle of the 21st century, ma'am.
Here's how, Steve, the Russian military is tactically does not come even close to US military. Nobody fights like Americans, right? We are superior, you know, competent. Our training is just superb. But Putin did not anticipate to fight Americans. Look at what we have thrown to Ukrainians. Anything, you know, it started off with Stingers and Javelins, and now it's all the way to Abrams tanks. We're potentially providing also Patriot missile defense systems. And so the Russians are having trouble because Ukrainians are using superior weaponry that we are providing, and because also they just have tremendous will to fight. And the argument that if we don't stop the Russians right now, that they're going to go after Baltics is illogical. If the Russians can't beat Ukrainians in a clear military victory, how the heck do those experts think that Putin is going to go after Poland, after Latvia, Lithuania? It's just it's just absurd what they are arguing.
Rebecca, I know you've got a bounce. Where do people? You've got the article in the New York Post about the Chinese. I think on Fox. About you had one the other day about zero probability that the Ukrainians could actually mathematically win. You've got a great piece up on the summit itself. Where do people go to get your to find your writings?
I'm on social media at Rebecca0132. On Truth, Getter, and Twitter, and I have a website, RebeccaCoppola.com. Google me. I'm on Fox News and New York Post. You can get all of my analysis at the unclassified level.
Rebecca, I think we agree with you here in the war room. I think this is the most dangerous time in modern history, and I actually think you could argue it's probably the most dangerous time in American history. I think it's actually more dangerous now than it was in the late 1930s as we were hurtling, or we were actually sleepwalking into World War II. But I think it's an incredibly dangerous time, and really appreciate you being one of the Sherpas that helped take the audience through all the complexity here.
Thank you. That is exactly why we need to put the right people in charge in 2024, somebody who can think critically and strategically. Thank you for having me, Steve.
Thank you, Rebecca. This has all been inextricably linked. In fact, do we have another cut of the TikTok individual? I think we have another cut. Let's go ahead and play the other. When you booted up and got it. And here's why. I want to show the arrogance. Remember, what you have is you've had up to date is unrestricted warfare. Okay. Unrestricted warfare is the battle plan for the Chinese Communist Party in its direct confrontation in the war they've been running in the United States. Don't ever forget, the CCP has been at war with the United States. Psychological war, cyber war, information war, economic war. Let's go ahead and play. I want to play another cut. I could play these cuts all day long. What I'm trying to show here is the arrogance of the TikTok management, the TikTok executives, particularly the CEO, who is obviously a CCP asset, and his arrogance and disdain for this question today to me was unparalleled and sends a big message to the American people that, hey, India took this thing down 2 years ago without any questions. We should have done the exact same thing. Let's go ahead and play this cut.
As you state in your testimony, ByteDance is TikTok's parent company. Is it accurate to say that you are in regular communication with the CEO of ByteDance, Leon Robo?
Chair Rogers, yes, I am in communication with him.
Okay. Kelly Zhang is the CEO of ByteDance China, overseeing Douyin, the Chinese version of TikTok. Are you in regular communication with Kelly?
I'm not in regular communication with her.
The ByteDance editor-in-chief is Zhang Fuping, correct?
I believe so.
And Wu Shugang is Beijing ByteDance technology board member and also an official of the Cyberspace Administration in China. Is this correct?
I believe so. They are not in the right...
Thank you. All of these individuals work or affiliated with the Chinese Communist Party are at the highest levels of leadership at ByteDance, a company where you previously served as the chief financial officer and where you regularly communicate with their CEO. TikTok has told us that you weren't sharing data with the CCP, but leaked audio from within TikTok has proven otherwise. TikTok told us that you weren't tracking the geolocation of American citizens. You were. TikTok told us you weren't spying on journalists. You were. In your testimony, you state that ByteDance is not beholden to the CCP. Again, each of the individuals I listed are affiliated with the Chinese Communist Party, including Zhang Fuping, who is reported to be the Communist Party secretary of ByteDance, and who has called for the party committee to, quote, take the lead across all party lines to ensure the algorithm is enforced by, quote, correct political direction. Just this morning, the Wall Street Journal reported that the CCP is opposed to a forced sale of TikTok by ByteDance, quoting a CCP spokesman as saying the Chinese government would make a decision regarding any sale of TikTok. So the CCP believes they have the final say over your company. I have zero confidence in your assertion that ByteDance and TikTok are not beholden to the CCP. Next question. Heating content is a way of promoting and moderating.
Tomorrow, I got to tell you, that's Kathy McMorris Rogers, and she's not known as a fire breather. But she did an excellent job today. And my point earlier about, you know, it's ridiculous we're doing this. It is overall. We should do what India did, what Modi did. We shouldn't be talking about selling this thing and shipping billions of dollars, selling it to Microsoft and shipping billions of dollars to the CCP. This is a CCP company. Kathy McMorris Rogers just went through the whole thing right there. You can see, and she's hammering all day long. The guy's lying, obfuscation, all of it. So it was hopefully a big wake-up call. I think it was a big wake-up call on Capitol Hill. Last night they had the Hill and Valley. This is a new kind of lobbyist group coming together from people on Capitol Hill and people in Silicon Valley. Peter Thiel was there. They had a couple people address the organization, and they really want to get tough with the CCP. But nobody wants to take down the CCP. We said today earlier on the show, I had Colonel Newsham, who wrote the book, When China Attacks. It's 6 months. If we cut them off from capital, if we cut them off from technology, they would fall in 6 months. Okay, as we get into this more, the geopolitics, you have to understand the politics of money, and particularly the geopolitics of money. Go to birchgold.com/Bannon right now. Just order. We've got, it's totally free. You can download. Three-part series so far. The third part is The Debt Trap. You will understand everything about the debt limit you need to know, everything about the negotiations coming on. Remember, we can't stop the inflation until you stop the government spending, and they're not going to stop it by themselves. We're going to have to force that to be stopped. You have to understand money, the debt, national debt, all of it. We've got a three-part series. The politics of money is the first. The second is the prime reserve currency. The third is the debt trap. Get all three of them. Plus, you can get every information kit. Gold is on fire, as you know. It's time now for you to immerse yourself and understand it. Understand why precious metals may be a hedge for you, particularly for your pension fund, either 401k or IRA. But check it out. Just Birch Gold. It's all free. Information kits are free. The series we've been working on with Birch Gold is totally free. Just go ahead and download it, read it, get the information kits. Then you can get online. You can go back, Philip Patrick and his team. A complete team of advisors and consultants that can help you go through the details of this. That's birchgold.com/Bannon. Go check it out today. Okay, I want to thank Memphis, particularly General Tadya and Rebecca Koffler. Fantastic show. We're going to get more into the geopolitics, the economics, the capital markets, and the politics of it all tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock when you'll be back in the war room.